Chapter 21. Revenge is a dish best served with mayonnaise and those little cheesy things on sticks. Osric the Loopy, planetary governor of Corania, appointed 756-M41, removed from office by the Officio Assassinorum, 764-M41. As it turned out, I didn't have to wait long for my day in court. Under the circumstances, Zyvan graciously allowed the Commissariat to convene the tribunal and his headquarters on Adumbria once the warp currents had stabilised enough to put the astropaths back to work, and a brisk exchange of signal traffic had established that no one could be bothered making the trip out from the subsector office on Corania for what everyone involved seemed to think was an open and shut case. By that time, the rest of our fleet had finally arrived, metaphorically red-faced and panting, just in time to play a couple of quick rounds of Hunt the Heretic. The last survivors of the Cornate invaders were picked off in pretty short order once our reinforcements arrived, leaving the five regiments who'd borne the brunt of the fighting to grab some much-deserved R&R, and Castine and Brocklaw had found time to meet in Skitterfall and sit in on the proceedings. "I appreciate this," I said, making myself as comfortable as I could on the bench outside the conference suite, where the two Castaforian commissars and the Valhallan from the 425th were concluding their deliberations. Beige sat on the opposite side of the lobby, alone save for Asmar, still rubbing absently at his arm where the demon had licked him. I suspected he'd acquired a lifelong nervous tic from the experience. "It was the least we could do," Brocklaw assured me, cracking his knuckles and stifling a yawn. "You put yourself on the line for us any number of times." This was true, albeit never from choice. "Quite," Castine shot a venomous glance at the other commissar. "Is it true you challenged him to a duel for insulting me?"
"I thought of it more as an insult to the regiment," I said, playing things down as usual.
Castine nodded, apparently not fooled for a moment. "Thank you anyway," she said. "So, how are things with the Lord General?" Brocklaw asked, breaking the awkward silence. I shrugged. "Pretty much as usual. Still not much of a regicide player. Nevertheless, the social evening I'd spent with him the previous night had been a pleasant one, only slightly overshadowed by the possibility that it could have been our last. Neither of us expected Beige's ridiculous charges to stick, especially as Zyvan had quietly seen to it that the triumvirate of commissars comprising the tribunal had been given access to some very highly classified files and been left in no doubt what would have happened if I hadn't acted as I did. But there was always the possibility that one or other of the Castaforians would apply the letter of the regulations rather than a dose of common sense, which, I've observed, is remarkably scarce in most cases.
"I thought you might care for some refreshment," Jürgen said, materialising a few paces behind his bouquet and passing round a tray full of tanner bowls.
I took one gratefully. "Thank you, Jürgen," I said, taking my first sip of the fragrant liquid. "Commissars," one of the Lord General's personal guard appeared at the door to the conference suite, "the tribunal is ready to announce its verdict."
"Typical," I said with heavy humour. "Wait all afternoon for a decent brew and then..."
I replaced the bowl on the tray.
"I'll keep the pot warm for you, sir," Jürgen said, which was as close as he would come to wishing me luck or expressing concern, and I nodded.
"I won't be long," I said, stilling a sudden fluttering of nervousness which took me completely by surprise. Damn it all, I'd faced down a demon, and not for the first time either. A few minutes listening to my colleagues huffing with self-importance couldn't hold a sconce to that, so outwardly, at least, I was completely impassive as I walked into the conference room. Beige at my side, and stood at parade rest in front of the trio of black-clad commissars seated behind the polished wooden table. Dravin, the commissar of the Valhallan Tankies, was chairing the tribunal by virtue of his length of service, roughly twice that of either of his colleagues, and rested his elbows on it, cupping his chin on steepled hands. "This has been an unusual case," he began without preamble, "and one which my colleagues and I have had to regard with the utmost seriousness. Fortunately, our verdict was unanimous in all particulars." He paused for dramatic effect. Beige licked his lips nervously, and I remained impassive with the ease of the practiced dissembler. You don't play as much poker as I do without learning to mask your feelings. Dravin indicated the data slate in front of him. "We have no hesitation in finding all the charges made against Commissar Kane completely baseless and without foundation." I inclined my head in what I calculated would be a sufficiently restrained response for a man of my reputation, and savoured the mew of disappointment which escaped from Beige's tightly clenched lips. Dravin returned the nod. "However," he went on, We feel that under the circumstances we have had no option but to introduce new charges of our own. Charges, I'm bound to say, which disappoint us and which reflect badly on the reputation for scrupulous conduct for which the Commissariat has always stood. This was a surprise, I must admit, and a thoroughly unwelcome one at that. But I kept my feelings from my face just as easily as before, did my best to ignore the look of vindictive triumph on Beige's, and nodded gravely. No point in panicking just yet. "I await your verdict with interest," I said levelly. "No doubt." Dravin glanced down at his data slate again. "Thomas Beige, you are charged by this tribunal with conduct unbecoming to a commissar. Your unwarranted interference in Commissar Kane's pursuit of his duty could have had the most catastrophic of consequences, not only for the world of Adumbria, but the entire sector." I glanced across at Beige. He seemed to be hyperventilating, incapable of making any sound other than, "Under the circumstances, we have no option but to recommend your immediate removal from field duties pending further inquiries. I'm sure you're aware that the most severe penalties may be deemed appropriate once properly formulated charges can be brought." So, as you'll appreciate, it was with a light heart that I rejoined Castine, Brocklaw and Jürgen in the corridor outside. Beige tottered out after me a moment later, looking as though he could already see the firing squad taking aim, and I took him gently by the arm. "If it helps," I said with all the sincerity I could muster, "I intend to testify that, in my opinion, you acted throughout from the best and most noble of motives. I'm sure you would have done the same for me."
"Oh, of course,"
he said insincerely. He began to pull away.
"Now, if you'll excuse me, I really must break the news to Colonel Asmar."
"Of course," I nodded sympathetically. "As to our other meeting, Jürgen will be acting as my second. When you've had time to appoint one, perhaps he would be so good as to convey a time and place convenient to you."
That won't be necessary."
Beige licked his lips, glancing at my chainsword, no doubt remembering I'd last used it on a Chaos Marine and a demon. He turned to Castine.
"I may have passed certain remarks in the heat of the moment. If any offence was caused, I most sincerely apologise."
"None taken, I can assure you," Castine said graciously.
"Good. Well, then..."
Beige tottered away, and I smiled with satisfaction. I'd let him sweat for a couple of days before I pulled a few strings to get him off. I'm not really a vindictive man, for all my other faults, and there was no point in letting them shoot the man. He might just have learned something from the experience, and even if he hadn't, it was going to be far more fun watching him squirm every time he was reminded that he owed me his neck. "Well, then," I echoed, turning back to my friends. Despite the damage the battling Chaos cults and our own forces had done, life in Skitterfall was returning to normal, and I felt I had something to celebrate. I seem to recall a rather pleasant little restaurant not far from here. Care to see if it's still standing?
At which somewhat self-satisfied juncture, Kane's account of the Adumbria incident comes to a natural end.
That was The Traitor's Hand, written by Sandy Mitchell and read by Stephen Perrin.
Penelope Rawlins,
Emma Gregory,
and Andrew James Spooner.
This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2020.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.